Welcome to the Gerald Journal podcast. My name is Holly Hensley. I'm the librarian at Gerald High School, and I facilitate this podcast. But the real stars are our hosts, Christine Collins and Stephen York, and our producer, Kessler Mixon. All three are smart and outgoing students here at Gerald High School, and they are very excited to bring this podcast to you. We have big plans to interview interesting characters and paint a colorful picture of life here in Gerald, Texas. Gerald's a small town located about an hour north of Austin, and we hope you tune in to the Gerald Journal podcast to hear what's happening in this up-and-coming community.
Hello and welcome back to the Gerald Journal podcast. I'm your host, Stephen York, and joining me always is the lovely Miss Christine Collins and our editor-in-chief of all things computer, Kessler Mixon. And today's guest, we have the 2019 Region 13 Superintendent of the Year. He's been a teacher, a coach, a high school principal, you name it, he's done it. I have the great pleasure of introducing Mr. Dr. Bill Chapman.
Great to be here, guys. I appreciate it.
Nice. We have a beautiful storm ambiance around here.
Apologize. Thank you again for coming in this sort of weather.
It's a good thing it's on audio and not video, so we're real good today.
All right. So, naturally, you obviously have gone through school, gotten your doctorate degree. So, you've been around the woods, as they say.
Yes, sir.
So, how about you just kind of tell us a little bit about growing up, how you were when you were younger, kind of what led you down this path?
It's a short but funny story when you gotta get down to it. Both my parents were educators. Right. My mom was a teacher. My dad was a teacher. My mom taught really fourth grade her entire career. My dad was a career and technical educator. At that time it was called ICT, which was basically a giant co-op program where we got kids through a co-op program. He did that around the state. We moved around a bit. I've lived all parts of Texas except anything west of 35. If it's east 35, I've lived in that area. I haven't gone beyond there. And my brother and I were both told from a young age we could do whatever we want to do, but don't be teachers. Point blank, my brother and I, being the very docile individuals we are, both became teachers. My brother's a teacher and coach still this day down in Corpus Christi, and I went to school. I actually went to school to become an athletic trainer. I originally went to school to become an accountant. Huh? I loved accounting, great. I didn't want to wear a suit and tie every day, to be honest with you, and be behind a desk. And so I went and became an athletic trainer.
You became a teacher as well?
Like I said, it happened in a roundabout way. Be a trainer. I loved being a trainer. I was a certified athletic trainer. Went through UTSA, their program. Graduated. I got a teacher certificate because most trainers worked in schools. And I didn't really want to teach science, so I got a history degree so I could teach social studies. My real true love is history. And then I got out. I got a job as a teacher and a coach and never worked a day as an athletic trainer. And just never looked back. So I was able to start as a teacher in Corpus Christi, Texas at a large school, Moody High School. I taught social studies. I was the head soccer coach, and I was a freshman football coach, and got promoted to a varsity football coach, kept the soccer coach the entire time, moved to Huntsville, Texas, was a soccer and football coach, became an assistant principal, then I became an associate principal at Willis High School, and then a high school principal, and then an assistant superintendent, and then I came to Gerald here about 7 years ago.
And how many years did it take you to do all of that?
Oh my gosh, a lot. This is my 25th year of being in education. So I was a teacher and coach for 8 years. I was an assistant principal for 4 years, an associate for 2 years, and then moved up from there. So it's been great.
And being a student that has a parent that's a teacher, I imagine that all through school it was A's and
I pushed myself more than my parents needed to. My brother did not. But it's a whole firstborn, secondborn thing. It was a totally different kid. He came out a little bit later. I liked school. I loved school. I really did. I was a teacher pleaser for the most part. I did enjoy having fun. I was blessed to go to a school. Really, Gerald reminds me a lot of my high school. My high school had 750 kids. Wow. And at a high school of 750, you know, we're now about 500 at Gerald. You get to do more than what you want to do. Right. It's not, you don't have to pick and do just athletics. I was in theater. I was I did football. I did track. I did powerlifting. I did UIL. I did UIL accounting. I did poetry and prose and all kinds of things. My mom was a theater major to begin with, so I really have a theatrical side as well. But you have to do everything. And that's why I try to keep here in Gerald as long as we can, is to let our kids do those things. And so I was able to have that piece. So yeah, I was a pretty good student. I was not, I was in the top 10% of my class, all those kind of things. But you know, my friends and I still, we had a good time. I'm still, my best friends are still the guys I went to high school with.
Wow.
My two best friends are guys that we got together our sophomore year in high school, and we've been best friends ever since then.
And do you think doing all those activities made you a well-rounded person?
100%. Again, I liked school. I wanted to get, I won't say I wanted to get A's all the time. I knew what I had to do to get an A,
right.
And I didn't always do what I should have all the way, I'll be honest with you. But I learned just as much on the football field, in the weight room, in my accounting class, in theater, to make me a better person than just the academics. I'm a firm believer that academics are great, but those skills you learn in other parts is just as important. Creating that work ethic, creating that drive, that comes from stuff outside just the academics.
Well said. So, moving on, obviously you do a lot for Gerald School District and all the teachers, everything. You are head of the food chain.
I'm it, yeah.
You are it, yeah. So, what I was wondering is, do you do anything kind of extra outside of just the school aspect, or?
Main thing is, my job is a lot of times it is all-encompassing. Even when I'm off, I'm still working to some extent. It's nothing bad, it's just the way the job works. Outside of school, I love playing golf. My wife and I play golf together, so it's a lot more fun. I get to make more time for golf because she also plays golf with me. Sometimes I like to relax, let's be honest. I love to travel. I do love to read. As you know, Ms. Hensley is quite proud of my donation of books. I'm an avid reader. Like today, if I wasn't here, I'd probably curl up on the couch and I'd probably read a book or two today. That's really what I can sit down and I voraciously read things, and my biggest passion is golf and reading.
Well, is there something specific you like to read, or just everything?
It depends. I'm a huge fan of James Mitchell novels, and he passed away, so it's not any new ones. But then I've gotten into the last few years a lot more suspense, crime, spy type novels. A lot of Balducci, Vince Flynn.
Any of the original James Bonds?
I've read some. I don't always like those as much. There's something about more the espionage of the CIA modern time things as opposed to that. I've tried the older ones, tried some of the Pattersons. I like, for some reason, also like the medical examiner books. I like when, we get those Patricia Cornwell books where they're dealing with the cadavers and cadaver farms. Sometimes it's that true crime espionage part is probably the area I go to the most.
All right.
Was this influenced by someone, or was you becoming a teacher influenced by anyone?
You know, indirectly my parents, but also go back to, my coaches and teachers in school. I had great teachers growing up all through elementary, and I went to lots of schools. I mean, I moved after second grade, after fifth grade, after sixth grade, after eighth grade, after ninth grade. I moved around a lot. And so I had, had teachers all over the place, but I had some really fantastic teachers, and some were coaches that were great teachers and coaches, had a great influence. And it just, I can't put my finger on what exactly it was, but it was the part of when I was student teaching, I fell in love with being around those kids. And so there were great kids. I was at Churchill High School in San Antonio, and then moving forward, I enjoyed it, and really, I was proud to be a teacher. I still am proud to be a teacher. It's one of the things that I love the most. I'm very passionate about history in a weird way. My class always, they call it story time, mm-hmm. as I would tell stories and it was a great time in history. But it was finding that niche there with those kids was great.
Yeah, personally, one of my favorite topics is history. And
I would agree.
It disappoints me so much whenever I have a teacher that is not a good history teacher. Because there are, in my opinion, there are two types of history teachers. There are those that actually gets the kids engaged and, you know how everything goes mm-hmm. and all that. And then there's those that just puts up a PowerPoint and just reads off of it, and it's just horrible.
I'm a firm believer in doing the roundabout way. I mean, yeah. I taught U.S. history in high school.
Yeah.
And so, you know, even when we were all, even beginning early year, there was always music in my classroom. I included the stories of the blues and of country and of rock and of jazz. I'll include that. And if my class was working, which wasn't very often, they were working individually or in groups and stuff, I would always play music of the era.
Yeah.
And we'd have questions and answers about the music as it was playing and how it relates. And they'd realize things. The thread of jazz and blues and country to when I get to my part, the rock and roll piece, which I'm a huge history of rock and roll buff guy. And so they got to see the strains of it goes back to here. It goes back to, you know, some of our all music is intertwined together. So I try to bring that in. And honestly, I'm a huge pop culture guy.
Yeah.
And so you can teach the fun part of history with the movies and music and all that kind of stuff and intertwine it with the politics, but there's a ways you can do it the right way to get the attention to go.
Yeah, or
the scandals. The scandals are fun.
The scandals are
always fun. You watch them too, so you never
there's a
know.
Lot more bad people in history than you think there are. You really dig in. It was really some serious corruption, so it's great.
Or you can do it like how Coach Hicks has the task of teaching the fundamental part of history for seniors, which is government.
Yeah.
And so usually how he really teaches this is he makes it how he does this is that he makes it very interactable. Like in this last project that we did, it was a board game. We had to create our own board game based off of the legislative part of the legislative branch of the
how a bill becomes law?
Yeah, of how the bill becomes
law. Did you get to watch it? I'm just a bill?
We've watched that like three times this semester.
The best way to do it. I was a Schoolhouse Rock generation.
Yeah.
So that was my Saturday morning when I was growing up. I have to admit, I'm big, big avid fan of that.
I'm just a bill.
Yep.
Anyway, go
ahead.
We would basically have to create these elaborate ways of how this happens, and while we were doing this, we learned a lot more than what we really would have if we just sat there with PowerPoint and said, this is how this happened.
And that's the one class I never taught. I never taught government. I taught U.S. history, world history, geography, and I taught AP economics as well. And I enjoyed the economics, really a math class. Like AP economics is really a math class, but I really enjoyed that one too.
Yeah, so
economics is a math class. Anyway, so kind of talking more about Gerald, obviously, in the school district, we are having a lot of construction right now. We have a new fine arts center coming in. We have a new elementary school. Can you share any insight on these?
We currently have four construction projects here in Gerald. Two here at the high school. We have the classroom addition out back, which had the foundation laid just last week, as a matter of fact.
Oh, really?
And if you ever look out there, the concrete blocks going up right now, that's the elevator.
There's an elevator?
There's a two-story building. Yes, just FYI, there are zero elevators in Gerald right now. By the time all these are done, we'll have three elevators, and we'll have all three of them.
Will there be a second floor?
There'll be a second story of that one. The auditorium will have an elevator. So we have the auditorium in the front. That's the big giant mud pit. That's really a mud pit right now. You probably can go swimming in the auditorium here a little bit with the way the rain's coming down again. But that's the auditorium, the elevator in there. Across the freeway, the IGO Elementary will be done, I believe, in July. We'll have our dedication, I think July 27th is the date for the IGO Elementary dedication. Mm-hmm. And then Gerald Middle School is having 12 classrooms added as well.
Oh, really? I didn't even know that.
You never see it unless you really go behind the school.
Right.
But basically, the two hallways of the Gerald Middle School, they're going to connect. And so you'll have a full lap around now. But there will be 12 classrooms, I think four science labs there, and then four science labs here. Mm-hmm. The science labs here will be upstairs. Mm-hmm. And it's a really great building. And as a matter of fact, part of that construction, you won't see it until the classroom addition here at the high school will be done in about January or February of next year. Uh-huh. The elementary again in July. The middle school addition will be done around September this year. It could be done before school begins this year.
Oh, wow.
And the auditorium is the latest piece. The auditorium
will
be done. You and Christine will be gone.
Yeah, sadly, two of us will be gone. He might see it.
Yes, Steve will see both of them.
See it.
Our goal is about October, November for the auditorium to be done. So we get hopefully have the Christmas concert in a year and a half will be there in the auditorium. But yes, all two-story here, two-story elementary school. The elementary school is about 800 kid capacity. The teachers have been selected. We have the dedication then. And it's just, it is a lot. We're growing, and it's just student growth. Is what's driving the need for that. Because, I mean, y'all see your classrooms now. I think the only rooms y'all have empty are the two double rooms here at the high school. We're adding four teachers to the high school next year.
Four teachers?
Yes, four teachers to meet the class sizes and the growth, because we'll probably grow 50 kids at the Gerald High School alone next year.
Really? Yeah, I believe we're having like five English, five history, five math, five science.
It'll be four social studies. It's the only one we have that will be five. We're adding in the science and the English, and then adding a third ag teacher. Their numbers are getting so large. The growth in Gerald is inevitable, and it affects the school, you know, first thing.
Mm-hmm. And I had the chance to talk to the mayor of Gerald today. And
I heard I missed him in your DC class. I went to go visit with him.
Yeah. And he was saying that he expects Gerald to grow about 7,000 people in the next 4 years.
He expects to have 7,000 more home sites in Gerald in the next 4 years. And so I'll give you how the math works for us. Okay. If we do our math, for every home built in Gerald, we get about 0.6 kids. So those home sites will be in, so there could be probably 6,000 homes or whatnot, but those 7,000 home sites, when they all come in, is another, do the math of 7 times 0.6, you know, we're talking another 4,200 kids in Gerald ISD at some point.
So because Gerald has grown so fast, do you think it'll continue to be an open district?
We're actually have a very, very minimal transfers. We think it's a bigger number, but it's really not.
Sorry to interrupt. So for those of us who don't know, myself open. Included. What is exactly an open district? I didn't know that there's...
Basically, we allow open and open enrollment. So a student who does not live in Gerald ISD can come here. If you take away, like, our staff kids, we probably have 70 or 80, that number. What we do become more selective. We don't have the space, we don't take them in. And so that can occur. We have the space right now. The kids are already here. We're going to keep them here. But we do limit at times when kids come in as an open enrollment part. But we do... Right now, there's no plans to close it, but we always could.
Yeah, and I have a few of my friends that have recently moved away from Gerald, and they're like, "Don't tell anybody that we've moved away because they might not let us back in here." And it's like,
if they take care of business, we'll keep them here.
Yeah,
that's one thing. We'll
you
do.
Guys will stay here. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
So,
go ahead.
What do you see Gerald looking like in about 10, 20 years?
According to the demographic reports, and actually we have a board meeting next Wednesday in which our demographer will come and give us our next update. And we post our updates on the Gerald webpage, so you're always able to pull down our demographic studies. We're basically, off the top of my head, I think we'll double in size in about 5 years and then double again in the next five. So you're talking, right now we're just shy of 2,000 kids. So we go to four, probably approaching 8,000 kids total in 10 years.
It's
a big change from what it used to be, let's be honest.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And this is just a personal question, because this has been plaguing my mind ever since junior year, whenever I figured out what an actual teacher's salary was, because I was looking it up. I was like, you know, maybe that's a job. Do you think teachers should get paid more than what they do now?
I do. Actually, there's a recent survey I saw a couple days ago where teachers are the third most respected profession.
Yeah.
However, compensation is not the best. And just FYI, the compensation for teachers is really determined by the legislature, our state. But teacher compensation is determined by our legislature.
Right.
They are actually in session right now. They go every 2 years in Austin. So we're actually working on our budget, and part of our budget depends on what's coming out of Austin. There is some movement to increase teacher pay this time. Unfortunately, Texas still ranks in the bottom five for teacher pay in the nation.
Oh. Yeah.
They're also, you know, we also rank with the lower cost of living as well. So there is some that piece. I'm not saying it should matter, but I would. I've seen it. We've worked diligently here in the last 7 years. We've increased teacher pay every single year.
Okay.
And so we hope to keep that up.
Because personally, in my opinion, if you have the teacher pay so low, you're going to get people that are being teachers not just to be a good teacher, you know, teach kids, it's just to have a job. But if you make teacher pay really high and high enough, you basically make it to where you have people that really want to be a teacher and be a good teacher, and if you make the pay high enough, make it to where the education for future generations, you make that education really, really well, which then in turn makes the future of the country very prosperous and great because of the education boosted up.
It is, and I will tell you one thing, and I'll speak for myself, and probably almost, 95% of teachers in General ISD and probably across the state, we don't always go into it for the money. There is a passion for being an educator. There's a love of being around kids, and you see it each and every day. You see it each and every day with the what your teachers do. You know, you've got some great, fantastic teachers on this campus, and it's not just, you know, not just here, 8:30 to 4:30.
Right.
The hours they spend of their own before, after school. I know I'm here, you know, I'm in my office most days late. I know several of your staff is here well past 4:30,
well past 5:30.
There's cars here almost every weekend, and the coaches, some of your sponsors, just regular teachers. They really put their heart and soul into it. And so there is a passion and a drive to be a teacher as well that does counteract some of the salary concerns and issues. But I do agree with you, Kessler. Hopefully we can take care of that and make it better over time.
But with that also comes, like Dr. Chapman said, that's all has to do with the legislator and how they get funded.
And it does.
If you do want to see change, it's always going to be informed and go vote for who you want in office, because that's what makes a difference.
100%. As a former social teacher, yes. Have your voice heard whenever and however.
Yes, don't.
That's your right.
Don't not vote.
Legislation is in session right now, so make sure you have your voice heard and you contact your legislator.
If you're 18 and older.
Sure. Yes.
All right, we did our political shout out for the year. Good job, guys.
Good job.
Anyway, so school nowadays, right, is very technologically based, a lot more than it was, say, 30 years ago, where it was more textbook. Now all the textbooks are online. There's more videos. Students are having new ways to use technology for presentations and learning. How has that affected Gerald from when you kind of started here to now, and how do you plan to continue to work with technology as time continues?
It is a double-edged sword in a variety of ways, and I'll go back to I'll start with my. I'm probably, you know, I'm a Gen Xer who grew up more on a technological side than most did. I had an Apple II computer. I remember started programming Apple II computers when I was in fourth grade. Programmed really up and through about eighth grade on Apple IIcs, Apple IIes. Just I just enjoyed it. Went to computer camp way back when there was very few computer camps you go to and geek it over programming.
The big computers.
With not even disks. We're talking before disks when there were tape drives.
I
had a
pre disks.
Commodore 64 that was a TRS-80 that actually had a cassette. That you used your data on the cassette. It was terrible. Oh, it's terrible.
It's not terrible. Good. It's not good.
I used to have one.
But it's the beginning of computers. So,
hang on a second, guys. We may have lost power downtown. So,
that's fine.
Power downtown.
Please check on JIS and JMS. You don't get that normally in your
That's great.
So, take care of that.
This storm is bringing a lot of things. A lot of editing for me. A lot of funny times.
This is great.
But so I grew up, you know, really on the technological edge. And even when I went to, I used my graduation money from high school, which y'all two are approaching right now, to purchase actually a desktop computer. I was one of the only kids who went to college in 1989 that had a computer in their dorm. And so I was very active in it. Mm-hmm. And so I went and became a teacher. I started teaching in 1993, 94 there at Moody High School. And there was one computer lab. Nobody ever used it because none of the teachers knew how to use the computer lab. Didn't know what all that could be done in that lab.
Wasn't that the beginning of the DOS?
Oh, it was DOS time. It was all DOS time. We were all Microsoft. It was you know, that piece. But it was just a matter of we were, you know, no teachers hadn't been trained to really utilize this oncoming piece of technology.
And
we were a large 2,000 kid high school.
Yeah.
And no one, and so I had free reign of the lab because no one else was really using it. And so I did a lot of my stuff in world geography and U.S. history, started using it, you know, really used it a lot. Same thing when I went to Huntsville 6 years later. There were two labs. One was almost never used. And so over time, schools have really adapted that because there are things, and so I say it's two-edged because it's good because there's so many things you could do in a classroom or that y'all are able to do that I can't. I mean, probably 90% of your school right now has a smartphone. Mm-hmm. Your smartphone has access to more information than I ever had unless I went to the library when I was in high school.
Yeah.
And it's at your fingertips. The problem is if we don't, we schools have to make sure we do a good job of educating how to discern information.
Yeah.
And this comes from my history part. You know, yep. You never assume your sources. You always have those primary sources you really look and dig into. Is this the truth? Is this real? And y'all live in a world where you have to really question what you see before you just accept it. And that's the part where we need a good job of making sure that's taken care of. And the accessibility to technology is fantastic. You've seen it cause problems in schools. I mean, I was a teacher back in the time when we took cell phones up. And so, you know, we don't necessarily all anymore, but there's times maybe we should take them up because there's times when, you'll admit it, you probably use them when you shouldn't. You know, we're pretty lax, but you know, some of your classmates really use them when they shouldn't.
That I will agree.
And
on.
So it can become detracting as well. You know, it's great, but we have to, as educators, find ways to utilize it in the right way. And you probably all have examples of classrooms where you have some teachers who use the Chromebooks y'all have, fantastic, where it's not a laptop worksheet.
Yeah.
You have some that probably is a laptop worksheet and some where it's not. Mm-hmm. And you probably get more of the classes when it's not that way, mm-hmm. because it's more of you're using it to discern, to process information, to take the information that you have and make it relative to what you're doing. And that's what we want to see happen. That's really, you know, we want to get beyond just, you know, typing something to be done, but really taking the information and using and synthesizing that stuff and really making something happen differently. And so we want to see more of those. We want to find more of those good examples and keep growing those to be better across the board. You'll see a lot more. That will impact education a lot in the future. It's not going to change. It's not. I mean, you know, it's just we have to find ways to utilize it the right way. And sometimes the dosage could probably be diminished, and sometimes it needs to be increased. And it's a very happy medium piece you got to find.
And it's really hard to use it the right way because I'm about to go to college in, I believe, middle of August, beginning of August, sometime near around there. And I'm going to be bringing my desktop. And my mom's like, no, you're not. And I'm like, yes, I am. I need my desktop. And she's like, but we're going to buy you. And I'm like, why buy me a laptop whenever I'm going to bring a desktop anyway? And she's going to be like, how are you going to take notes in class? Well, I have a pen and I have a paper, so I can take notes that way. Mm-hmm. She really doesn't want me to take my desktop because what she fears is going to happen is that I'm going to play video games on it instead of doing homework.
And as a parent, I will speak to that. My son did fantastic his first year at college.
Yeah.
Then we let him take something with him the second year, and those grades diminished that second year.
Yeah.
So I understand the mom side of that part as well.
I understand her side as well. But if you have self-control.
And that's a hard part, yeah.
Yeah, if you have self-control, that's how you overcome this.
We need to make sure we teach those soft skills as much, because the soft skill pieces, you have the drive to do it yourself. Whether no matter what's going on here, you're still doing what you need to take care of first.
Yeah.
And that's the part that's important.
And in fact, I right now have not touched my computer in like 3 weeks just to keep my grades up.
Fantastic. You got 2.5 weeks, Carl.
Actually, it's more like one because the next week is
final. That's true. You're very true with it.
And speaking on the growth of Gerald, do you think that we'll see more AP classes here at Gerald?
Honestly, the answer is probably yes, and I'll put my old high school hat on. Right now at our size with 500 kids with 120 per class or so, we couldn't sustain a dual credit and an AP. It just wouldn't work. And so the idea is over time it will grow. There's no doubt. At some point in time, we'll have both an AP English track and a DC English track. I'm a big, huge dual credit fan because it's guaranteed. As someone who taught AP classes, I say that, is because it's guaranteed credit in your back pocket. But there are some times when APs are better. We need to do better about growing our AP math and probably our AP science down the road. And also, as our size increases, we'll have more opportunity for the human geography, the other, you know, as we build art back up, having the studio art piece, things like that we can bring in. But yeah, AP is going to be a part of who we are because we want to provide the differentiation for our students, whatever level they're wanting to get to. Just like we keep adding CT programs, we want to have that piece as well because I think both those are important for kids in different ways.
And I know with so many things you have going on, like just regarding school itself, outside of school, like a school official, just everything that you have to think about. How are you able to juggle and handle all that?
if you focus your ADD in the right way, you can do anything you want to do.
I understand that.
It's part of that's true. Part of it is just it's. I've been doing this stuff with school, especially. I've done it for quite a while, mm-hmm. and there's a part where the experience trumps anything. It really, truly does. I will tell you that I've been blessed in Jarrell ISD to have the growth I've been able to have with construction, with the growth of the students, with the demographic. All that stuff has helped make it better each and every time, and help me be able to, back to my favorite word, synthesize information very quickly. Mm-hmm. You get used to making decisions. I'll go back to my days as a high school principal. I mean, you think about a high school principal, I was on campus, a little bit bigger than what Jarrell High School is now. The number of decisions you make each and every day, each and every hour, you get better about making decisions. And so you just, if you keep that core of what you're doing, and you just always try to make your decisions of what's best for kids, and sometimes what's best for kids, what they think is best for them, but the long run, how you get there, that's how we try to keep it and do it right. It's hard. It's hard, but it's, you try to stay true to who you are, mm-hmm. And just build it that way.
And how do you tackle knowing the fact that everything you do in the best interest of the kids, but sometimes, like, we're young, we don't see it.
It's hard, and so, like, just today, I was talking to a kid about the hats not in the school. I go, do you know why we don't have hats in school? And he goes, no. I go, well, let me tell you a couple of reasons why. You know, I go back to my grandfather. My grandfather taught me two real rules growing up from the time I was 3 years old. You always hold the door open for a female. So you always take care of your mom, your grandma, you know, whoever it is, you always hold the door for them. And two, you always take your hat off when you're inside because it's out of a sign of respect.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and that's based off of old-time chivalry where the old knights would mm-hmm. open doors 100%. For their females.
It's all off the chivalrous code.
And then whenever they would be indoors, they would take off their helmets. And nowadays, it's now a hat.
And then on top of that comes in the fact where, you know, we live in a world where school securities are very important.
Right. Yes.
Yes.
I want to see your eyes.
Yeah. Mm. And
plain and simple. And so he goes, oh, that kind of makes sense. So if we do better about explaining why some things exist, that goes a long way. Not everyone does that sometimes. And so it's there.
And yeah. I really like the fact that you're able to talk to us and stuff like that. I know that for the student handbook, you asked about our opinions on what we wanted, and that makes a difference because it feels like we have a voice and stuff like that.
We try.
So I really appreciate things like that.
No, very good, because I know a lot of school districts, I still have friends who go into Georgetown where their handbooks and what they have to do are written down mm-hmm. by the school district, and they have to follow it to the T or severe consequences. And I like that, especially here in Jarrell, that there's a bit more... It's a bit more about the kids being able to be a part of it, and then it's like, well, if the kids want one thing, you can see what the kids want, and then you can be like, okay, we can make this work a little bit. Obviously, there are some exemptions to that, but
it's a happy medium. Mm-hmm. First and foremost, I have to make sure that all of y'all and I put 2,000 kids in general are my kids. I got to make sure my kids are safe.
Yeah.
And safety is first and foremost. And then we want to focus on the academic piece. And then we want to make sure we build up and keep adding bit by bit. And it's hard. And so seeing the bigger picture of things is where those things come in. But we do want to make sure we talk to y'all because you're here. You experience it. And if we can, you know, just by answering questions or just by asking opinions, it's the best things we can do. So.
All right. So before we end for today, one more quick announcement. It is, as a matter of fact, Teacher Appreciation Week. And so on behalf of everyone here at Jarrell and the Jarrell Journal podcast, one, I would like to thank you, Dr. Chapman, for everything that you've done here and even for meeting for us today under these weather conditions.
Hey, I'm dry in the library, so it's great.
Yeah. And I would also just like to thank all the teachers out there who continue to do what they do and to strive to improve the future generations and make sure that we have the knowledge to go forward and succeed in society. So once again, just thank all of you. And thank you again, Dr. Chapman.
I'm glad I've seen the esteemed list of podcast interviews you've had, and I'm glad to be a part of that piece. So I thank you all very much.